Actually, I slept like one drugged until about 11 o'clock, and could have had a very easy day if I hadn't myself long ago told everybody that I wanted to see the 4-H youngsters when they came to town. So about 11:30, I began my day with a talk with Bess about the May 7th tea for all of the arts people with a capital A, which looms ahead of me as one of the few things I've ever regarded with serious awe and inadequacy. And then there was John Connolly in the West Hall with Lyndon, Secretary Rusk, Secretary McNamara, and Mac George Bundy. They were there for lunch. I had a glass of sherry with them. John was up to testify before the Chief Justice's committee about his own memories of November the 22nd. He and Nellie, both of them, did it. His hand was out of a sling, which I rather disapproved of because he's going to have to use it, I'm afraid, during the campaign unless he keeps it in that sling. He looked so handsome and really quite well, but very gray. I kept it to myself about what I thought when that loud blast went off in the plane, but I was very cognizant of what John had said in an interview about the 21-gun salute to Ehrhard in December and how it almost shook his nerves unbearably, strong man that he is. Then at 2 o'clock, I went down to the Blue Room to greet the 200 4-H youngsters, four from each state, selected for their outstanding qualities of achievement and citizenship for this convention trip to Washington. Party got off to a lively start when him and her, being petted by Lucy on her return from school, eluded her, dashed into the East Room, where the delegates to the conference were assembled, raced through the room with Lucy in hot pursuit, wearing bobby socks and loafers, and with a raincoat billowing out behind her. Not a very pretty sight. She caught them, tucked one under each arm, and made off with them. With delicious good luck, I had happened to choose my green silk dress to wear, and found that all the girls were in the green 4-H uniform. First, I met the leaders. Ann Williams of Angleton, Texas, who gave me a leather-bound volume of the Report to the Nation by 4-H, and Ronald Keyes of Kansas, who had a handsome pair of stirrup bookends for Lyndon, and Linda Curtis of Vermont, who gave me a paperweight with a 4-H emblem on it, and Claudia Truex of Indiana, who gave me a great big bouquet of white carnations. Jane Freeman received with me. Everybody knew her because she had been with them throughout the conference. Actually, with the 220 4-Hers and some 100 sponsors, I guess footing the bill for the trip certainly gives them the right to join in on anything nice that happens. From reading their badges, I judge that they're the executives of companies that would have some bearing on the lives of 4-H people, like the Coats Thread people, and then all the county home demonstration agents and agricultural extension people from colleges like Texas' own A&M. I followed them on into the state dining room where they were having punch and cookies. They seemed to like the brownies that Zephyr made the best. Talked to several groups of them and thought what a fine bunch of young folks they were and how glad I am that 20% of their membership is now reaching into urban living, since we, no happy thought to me, are ceasing to be an agricultural, rural country and turning into an urban, industrial country. They were wholesome and fine, and I'm glad I had them, even if I had been up till 3 o'clock the night before. I left them to go downstairs to meet a group of 5 students from the Liberty School of Braintree, Massachusetts. Their classmates had gathered together, collected trading stamps, and financed a trip for these youngsters to Washington. What a country we are. So much compassion, so much interest. It's still a Cinderella sort of country. Lyndon strolled in, looking for me, and so they all got to meet him, too. Their teacher, a Negro, was Mrs. Woods Pittman, who, of course, taught them in Braille. Next, I went quickly upstairs for a little private chat with Mrs. Ed Cape from San Marcos and two of her friends, Mrs. Camp and Mrs. Evans, up here for the DAR convention. I had asked Mrs. Cape to bring her friends and come to the 4-H tea because it would be the only chance I'd have to visit with her. We reminisced about the days of 37 and the ensuing 8 or 10 years in San Marcos, old campaigns, that crystal clear San Marcos River, the camp, the wonderful weekends we spent there. She talked about Lyndon standing shaving in the middle of the stream while we listened to reports from some long ago political campaign, family news of her daughter Mary Louise and banker son Bob, and dear Mr. Eddie, who has entered that shadow land of lingering on in life with his swift, able mind gone. And then I said goodbye, and Ambassador and Mrs. Heisberg came for a farewell visit to me. If I don't watch out, I'm going to get tea poisoning, because it's easy to have 5 or 6 sessions of it in one day. We had a good visit. Among the easiest to know in all the diplomatic corps, and I'm so sorry to say goodbye to them. She says she'll leave a part of her heart behind in Texas. I talked about my trip to Luxembourg. I told them that surely we'd be meeting on their trips back or ours over there. Then after they left, there was an hour or two of work on mail, late dinner with Lyndon, the read and file envelope to go through, the unread newspaper articles, and then to bed. I got along all right in the Cleveland stories. It just sounded like the gay adventure that it was. Every night, Lennon and I talk about what's happening to the railroad negotiators, and we look over toward the EOB, and I know how much is hanging in the balance for him. How can I possibly say for him when it's really for the country that is hanging in the balance?